Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning and thank you for choosing to start and end your week with Africa Link. I'm Crispin Mwakideu in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, Nigeria's Council of State calms speculation of any postponement by deciding to stick with the planned election date.
What is significant out of it is that Nigeria is going to have election in February 14.
Ghana reaches the Africa Cup of Nations final after walloping host Equatorial Guinea 3-0 in a controversial semi-final match.
The Equatorial Guineans are attacking the Ghanaian fans, so all of them are now seeking refuge at the side of the pitch.
Plus, today being Friday, we will also be hearing what you have to say about the stories making news across Africa. Stay tuned.
Top story.
It is decided. Nigeria will go to the polls on February the 14th. Speculations of any possible shift to the election date were put to rest by Nigeria's Council of State. The Council of State is an influential advisory body made up of the country's two presidential candidates, governors, former state leaders, and the chairman of the Electoral Commission. Mark Caldwell has been speaking to DW correspondent Ubale Musa in Abuja to find out if talks of pushing the elections had anything to do with the Boko Haram Islamist insurgency.
Yeah, the issue of insecurity was brought to the attention of the council as one of the reasons that can facilitate the delay. But then the opposition party, which has some significant representation in the council, insisted that it's not possible to end insurgency in 6 weeks or even 6 months if it cannot be ended in 6 years. As such, it shouldn't be an issue to consider the postponement of the election because of insecurity. And secondly, the issue of a permanent voter's card was also brought to the table, but it was also dismissed. As such, the commission insisted, the chairman of the commission told the members of the council that the commission is ready for the election.
Now, the opposition APC has accused the ruling PDP party of President Jonathan of orchestrating a campaign to delay the vote. What do you make of that accusation by the opposition?
Yeah, one of the governors from the opposition party who came out of the meeting confided on us that the president was a bit emotional and temperamental on the issue of postponement, trying to justify why the election should be postponed. As such, they said it's purely a PDP affair than a national concern. As such, it cannot hold any water as at now. And before now, there was a series of campaigns being sponsored by the government in some private and public media houses in the country, calling for the postponement because of certain reasons, logistical reasons, according to the campaigners.
The election is set to go ahead in just over a week's time. Will all the preparations be finished by then?
Yeah, the INEC said it has started sending less sensitive material to the election venue. As such, it's fully ready for the election, according to the chairman of the Election Commission, Professor Atairu Jega, who insisted that there is nothing that can stop the election from going on.
Ubale Musa in Abuja. Political analysts have described Nigeria's presidential election as a two-horse race between the incumbent Goodluck Jonathan and former military ruler Muhammadu Buhari. Under Jonathan, Nigeria has become Africa's leading economy. Jonathan has boasted of improving agriculture, university education and infrastructure. But critics say he has failed to tackle the Islamist insurgency or high-level corruption. Adrian Krish and Jan-Philip Scholz tell us more about Goodluck Jonathan in this report adapted for Africa Link by Eunice Wanjiru.
Ebua Walter is enjoying the peaceful atmosphere in the small town of Otuoke. The pensioner who is sitting at the waterside watches children at play as canoes glide past. But when he is asked for his opinion about the Nigerian president, Goodluck Jonathan, whom he knew as a boy, the 65-year-old becomes surprisingly active.
He's a very peaceful somebody.
He is a very peaceful man, obedient, and a very sincere person in our community. He used to go to the bush with his father to chop down trees. He used to work with the father.
He used to work with the father, exactly what I'm saying.
Born in Otuoke in 1957, Jonathan comes from a poor family. His father built canoes and his mother took care of the children. Otuoke lies in the center of Niger Delta, a region which has often been in the news. mainly with negative headlines since oil was first discovered there in 1960. There were reports about leaky pipelines which led to the destruction of large areas of vegetation and robbed people of their livelihood, brutal militia who would kidnap local residents and foreigners and then demand large ransoms. None of this can be seen in Otuoke. On the contrary, it appears idyllic, an example of successful development. The street lights are powered by solar energy. Streets are paved and everything looks clean and orderly. The fact that President Jonathan was born and brought up here has certainly not harmed Otuoke. But the people here rarely want to talk about the development projects. Residents are full of praise for the village's most famous son. After studying zoology, Jonathan worked as a lecturer and environmental advisor for the Development Commission in the Niger Delta, an authority whose aim is to give the oil-rich but poor regions a boost through development projects. Jonathan entered politics in the late 90s. As a member of the ruling People's Democratic Party, he was elected deputy governor of his home state, Bayelsa. Above all, Jonathan's reputation as a loyal party functionary attracted the attention of President Olusegun Obasanjo, whose protege he became. In 2007, Jonathan became vice president and some 3 years later the head of state, following the death in office of President Umaru Yar'Adua. Within just a few years, Goodluck Jonathan, a political nobody, had become the president of Africa's largest democracy. But after 5 years in power, political observers close to Jonathan give him only average marks for his performance. Looking at two of his main policy pledges, providing a reliable power supply and fighting corruption, the country is today worse off than when he assumed presidency. Political analyst Nenga James says the self-serving mentality among the political elite has dramatically widened the gap between rich and poor in Nigeria under Jonathan's rule.
That corruption is becoming a cancer in the Nigerian state. There is abject poverty in the midst of plenty.
A general weakness political observers attribute to Jonathan is his failure to stand up to Boko Haram. This could prove to be a stumbling block when he seeks a new term on February 14th.
Eunice Wanjiru with that report written by Adrian Krish and Jan Philip Scholz.
Get the stories that are shaping the continent here on Africa Link.
AU Commission for a Tough Mission. African Union experts meeting in Cameroon are today expected to finalize plans for a 7,500-strong multinational task force to fight Boko Haram. The force was approved at the AU summit in January. But even as the meeting got underway, Boko Haram fighters were staging attacks inside Cameroon, burning churches, schools, markets and mosques. From the capital Yaoundé, Moki Kinzeka reports.
At the beginning of the experts' meeting, Cameroon's Minister of Defense, Edgar Aleme Benga, said Boko Haram fighters had again challenged African leaders who had called for a regional force to combat the terrorist group by going on a killing spree in northern Cameroon. Mbenga said at least 800 Islamist extremists had killed more than 100 people since Wednesday.
Nous avons 91 personnes.
91 civilians were killed. We also counted the corpses of 13 Chadian soldiers and 6 Cameroonian soldiers. May I add that these figures are tentative because many of the hundreds of people who were seriously wounded are still dying. The death toll is increasing.
C'est un bilan qui peut évoluer.
Last week, the African Union authorized a 7,500-strong force to confront Boko Haram with troops from Nigeria and its four neighbors, Cameroon, Chad, Niger, and Benin. Mbenga said assembling the regional force was a matter of urgency as Boko Haram was now using civilians as shields, making it difficult to engage them in combat.
L'importance de la réunion.
These experts will lay down a modus operandi for the military and all other formalities for the force so it can start operating as soon as possible. After the experts have finished their work, the African Union will submit their proposals to the United Nations Security Council, where it will seek endorsement and financial assistance.
Danjuma Sheni represents Nigeria at the experts' meeting. he said the insurgency had claimed thousands of lives and had displaced millions.
The stakes are, of course, extremely high. Very, very. The issue of refugees, the impact on our economy, the threat to international peace and security. Nigeria is one of the main countries affected by the insurgency, and therefore we expect cooperation from our neighbors and the international community.
Colonel Pale Olo Alain is Director of Military Operations at the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS. He explained how they would be supporting the new force.
We are here to give to the future task force all the knowledge in terms of concept of operations, in terms of concept of logistic support, as well as rule of engagement to make this force really operationalized.
The plan being examined in Yaoundé is critical to obtaining UN Security Council approval for the mission, which is what the AU is seeking. The AU also wants funding, but the UN, it was disclosed during the meeting, has promised to pay only for logistics. The AU would pay for salaries.
DW correspondent Moki Kinzeka reporting from Yaoundé. And in case you're joining us, you're listening to Africa Link from DW Studios in Bonn, Germany.
Human rights.
Ever since social media turned the Arab Spring into a global phenomenon, many oppressive regimes have become wary of the power of the internet. In a bid to stop political unrest brought about by fears that the DRC president Joseph Kabila wanted to stay longer in power, his government barred people from sending text messages or accessing the internet for 2 weeks. As Patrice Jitera reports from Kinshasa, the measure is causing hardship to a particularly vulnerable section of the population.
This is Kumu Kilolo, 42 years old. He is one of thousands of disabled people in the Democratic Republic of Congo who have a hearing and speaking impairment. He depends on SMS to converse with other people. Like many others in his position, he prefers to use SMS rather than a translator when communicating with people. But he uses a translator to tell us that the shutting down of SMS services is causing him serious inconvenience.
He says that cutting off the SMS is so bad for him because he is married and because of his work. Sometimes he can have a problem that may prevent him from reaching his place of work. He'd need to send an SMS to his boss to inform him about it.
Sami Katula also has a speaking impairment. He is a dressmaker and tells us also through a translator that he's having a hard time coping with customers without SMS.
He says that he is not happy to be denied accessing SMS. He feels that there is no democracy in the country and the government should respect the right of people with speaking impairment.
The director of a center for people with speaking and hearing impairment, Deogracias Chimanga, said many people with these disabilities in the DR Congo are angry at the suspension of SMS services.
We've been blocked. Most of the people at the center are angry because there are no SMS services to enable them to communicate. Patience seems to be running out, and those who have been affected are now contemplating to march to the ministry because they also have rights to live like any other people.
Whereas people with a speaking and hearing impairment are affected by the absence of SMS services, other residents of the DR Congo have been hit by the suspension of the internet. Muganza Lombe, who has been using it for his research work, feels that he's being cut off from the outside world.
But when we say that we would, it became like a small village. You can be in touch with those who are United States or Canada or whatever. That is affected me too much.
Human rights activist Noah Samba says closing down the internet and SMS services is bad news for democracy in the DR Congo.
I think it's a bad sign, because when the democracy is respected in a country, the government cannot cut people from the internet like this, and people have no way to connect to each other, and I think that's not good. It's not a good sign.
The United Nations has also called on the government to reinstate all internet and SMS services.
Patrice Chitera reporting from Kinshasa.
Harare, Nairobi, or Abuja, Africa Links correspondents bring Africa stories to you.
Let's now head to the war zone. That is how a top Ghanaian football official described Thursday's semi-final match in Malabo. Ghana's Black Stars humbled hosts Equatorial Guinea by defeating them 3-0 to reach the Africa Cup of Nations final after a 33-year drought. However, the match had to be suspended for more than half an hour after angry home fans started throwing objects at Ghanaian fans. Riot police were called in as a police helicopter hovered above the stadium. Back in Accra, the incident took away the celebratory mood, as Isaac Kalechi reports.
Jubilant Ghanaian soccer fans here at this food court in Accra cheered the Black Stars of Ghana on as the team scores 3 to beat host nation Equatorial Guinea. Ghana thus qualifies for Sunday's final against neighbours Ivory Coast. But Thursday's semi-final match wasn't without some controversy, as described by this passionate Ghanaian who has been commenting on a loudspeaker for the crowd here.
The Equatorial Guineans are attacking the Ghanaian fans, so all of them are now seeking refuge at the side of the pitch.
With less than 10 minutes to end the match, supporters of the host nation began throwing bottles and other items onto the pitch in disappointment at the performance of their team. Ghanaian supporters at the Malabo Stadium became immediate targets, forcing them to seek refuge on the pitch. The match was suspended for almost 30 minutes to enable officials to control the irate home fans. The referee resumed the match, and Ghana's victory was confirmed at the end of the game. Some Ghanaian supporters were shocked and disappointed at the incident.
This is disgraceful. This is awful. I mean, the police are there. They could see those who are throwing the things, and they need to be picked up and sanctioned.
It's very disgraceful. It's very disgusting. It just shows that why the team has lost and why we won.
Even though we won, the whole place is quiet. You don't see any jubilation around because of what happened.
So I feel embarrassed. And I feel humiliated, even though Ghana has won. And ideally, I'm supposed to be excited. What happened there is a bad reflection of the continent, and it tells bad of what we are doing and what our patience level are.
I feel excited about everything. At the end, everything didn't go so well as we expected. We won all right, but since those people there are not safe enough, we just take it as that.
Meanwhile, Ghanaians are anticipating a victory for their Black Stars when they play Ivory Coast on Sunday. Former Black Stars player and now coach Felix Abwaji is hopeful Ghana will win the trophy.
Yeah, with this performance, I think they have got a big chance, because it's been a long time we have seen the Black Stars play so exciting football like this. Even in the World Cup, they couldn't exhibit such wonderful football. Today has been exciting. We have all enjoyed their play, and hopefully we are going to watch a wonderful game on Sunday.
All eyes will now be on Ghana and Ivory Coast as the two countries fight for the ultimate prize on Sunday.
DW correspondent Isaac Kalechi in Accra, and from us, Africa Link, may the best team win.
Your say.
If you have been a keen listener of this program, then by now you are aware that we usually end the week with your say. That is where we give you the time to air your views and opinions on some of the stories you've aired and articles posted on our page. Abubakar Jallo has been going through some of your feedback and has been sharing some of them with me.
Yeah, we actually posted an article about plans of the African Union to set up an anti-Boko Haram joint task force comprising of some 7,500 troops on the ground.
Yes, the African Union confirmed those plans during last weekend's summit held in Addis Ababa. Troops to form this multinational force are expected to come from Nigeria, from Chad, Niger, Cameroon and Benin, the countries mostly affected by Boko Haram's insurgency.
Otumbari Onyekachi Matthew commented on the article saying, Boko Haram isn't that much of a difficult problem for Nigeria to curb, but the sponsors are those thwarting the efforts by these gallant military men. There is so much sabotage in the effort to contain the terrorists, and so even if those forces come into Nigeria, I personally see no significant impact it will make. Greg Marshall differed from Onyekachi and said, any effective move to wipe out Boko Haram is a good one. This seems like a good start. John Watson was not impressed by the AU's number of 7,500 soldiers. He said, they'll need at least 40,000 more than that. And then Anton Adema replied to John saying, it is not about numbers but stealth and destruction, small teams.
Well, you're right, Abu, I must agree with you. Those are very indeed interesting stuff.
And we are just getting started here.
Oh, really?
Yes, indeed.
Well, I'm all ears.
Just want to say that you can find comprehensive background information on Boko Haram as well as in-depth analysis by simply visiting our webpage dw.de/Africa. We also posted another article titled South Africa Apartheid Assassin Eugene de Kock Wins Parole. This article generated a heated debate on DW social media page.
De Kock is a former South African apartheid death squad leader. He's been granted parole after 20 years in prison. De Kock had been dubbed prime evil for his activities targeting black South African activists and was given two life sentences plus, imagine, Abu, 212 years in prison for 89 charges, including 6 counts of murder.
I do have a really interesting response to that. Patty Rogers from Lagos wrote in and said, two life sentences plus 212 years equals 20 years? Something seems desperately wrong with that math. Interesting.
Very interesting indeed.
But Laurie Smith Masuta said, the Kock is granted parole in the interest of nation building and reconciliation. Other nations will never understand, but South Africans who follow the Truth and Reconciliation Commission hearings can. I trust he has shown remorse and will do community service. Ronald Brackett had only one sentence to describe this. Bad idea. He hasn't come close to paying his debt to society.
Wow, some really heavy stuff coming from the listeners out there. And are there any comments to lighten up the mood apart from this guy who is out?
Yeah, we do have some light responses. But first of all, a question for you. What will you do if the electricity goes out?
What I would do when the electricity goes out, like right now?
Yes, right now.
Look for a matchbox and a candle or my mobile phone to try and see.
Let me tell you what is happening in South Africa, which is basically one of Africa's powerhouses. South Africans have turned to social media to vent their anger over the frequent power outages. The Kenyan Anthony Tonye joined the discussion and said, welcome to Africa. Matter of fact, it's home here in Nigeria.
Abubakar Jallo with Your Say. And if you'd like to take part in next week's Your Say, all you need to do is send us your opinion on the stories you've been covering, either by a text message to country code 49160-957-59510. The number again, country code 49160-957-59510. An email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.de/Africa Link Podcast.
And as always, before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. Nigeria's Council of State says the country will stick with the February 14th as the date for the upcoming elections. African Union experts meeting in Cameroon are expected to finalize plans for a 7,500-strong multinational task force to fight Boko Haram. And Ghana will now face Ivory Coast on Sunday in what football analysts say will be a thrilling Africa Cup of Nations final. And there we come to the end of another week here on Africa Link. Abubakar Jallo takes over the microphone next week on Monday. Do join him if you can. From me, Crispin Wakideu, have a splendid weekend.